Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Ken in my Friday reader seat for the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Friday, July 22nd, 2022. Our first piece from above the fold, Simmons Pet Food adding new line. A pet food producer in Dubuque is primed for a production expansion that will welcome more than 30 additional employees to its already growing workforce. Simmons Pet Food started operations in Dubuque last July. A second pet food production line will begin commercial operation in August at the plant. The new line, which is installed in the existing facility, was part of the company's original growth plan in Dubuque. Once in operation, the second line will add 17 million cases, or 240 million units, to the Dubuque plant's annual production output, and the facility's total workforce will top 400. Our team members have done a fantastic job preparing to bring on this second production line to help meet growing customer demand and produce more food for the pets we love, said Mark Donovan, Vice President of Operations in Dubuque, in an email from Simmons to the Telegraph Herald. Simmons Pet Food operates under the umbrella of Simmons Foods, a family-owned business founded in 1949 and headquartered in Arkansas. Officials announced plans to open a pet food production facility in Dubuque in December 2020 and worked with the city to secure incentives such as tax increment financing rebates and a land acquisition grant. The company held a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the 275,000-square-foot facility at 501 Seiple Road, which formerly operated as a Flex Steel Industries plant, in July 2021, at which point Simmons employed 150 people in Dubuque. Almost exactly a year later, the Dubuque facility's workforce has more than doubled and additional growth is on the horizon with the opening of the second production line. We're certainly pleased with all the positive ripple effects from Simmons deciding to expand here in Dubuque, said Rick Dickinson, president and CEO of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation. They have fulfilled and exceeded all expectations on the project and are now exceeding 300 employees, which is significantly higher than they originally anticipated. Company officials report that Simmons currently employs 370 people in Dubuque and that the total will top 400 in the next several weeks. When Simmons announced plans to open in Dubuque, company officials predicted that the operation would ramp up to 270 jobs by the second quarter of 2023. Although it's a tight labor market, they have been very successful in finding the talent they need, Dickinson said. He added that he has been impressed with the varied way Simmons officials have recruited workers, including online. The company also has made use of the Opportunity Dubuque program and worked with Northeast Iowa Community College on Earn and Learn and upskilling programs for employees. Anyone that's recruiting today the way they recruited 3 years ago is going to be struggling, Dickinson said. Donovan also wrote that Simmons recently announced plans to offer hourly employees a back-to-school bonus and an increase in hourly wage rates. The company's total investment in the Dubuque operation is approximately $100 million. Dickinson said the facility also has a major financial impact because of its use of city utilities. They are a major customer of city services, utilizing both sanitary sewer and water, he said. They're a major energy user, and they run a 24/7 operation, so all those things are benefits to our market. We're fortunate to have been successful in recruiting them to start with, and we look forward to their continued growth. Our second piece comes out of Platteville. Platteville salutes area volunteers, and we have a small inset picture of a gentleman showing something to an onlooking lady, and the caption reads, "Longtime volunteer John Dutcher shows his Building Platteville Volunteer of the Year Award to Kathy Kopp on Thursday during the Salute to Volunteers ceremony, part of Platteville's 25th annual Hometown Festival Week." And our piece reads, "Whether it be chipping in at a German orphanage during the Cold War or working with the Platteville Kiwanis Club, Dutcher said he always has worked to positively impact those around him. My wife told me I should volunteer around here in Platteville, and I grew up in 4-H and Boy Scouts, so it really wasn't such a big deal to keep it up," said Dutcher, now nearing his 80th birthday. Dutcher was one of about 30 volunteers recognized Thursday at Platteville's annual Salute to Volunteers event. The Platteville Regional Chamber-sponsored event was held as part of the city's annual Party in the Park, an event that Dutcher helped start 25 years ago. "It's really nice of them, and I was pretty surprised," said Dutcher, who was named Building Platteville's Volunteer of the Year. "I started Party in the Park years ago, and this event is my baby. It's nice to see it's been going on ever since." Also among those recognized Thursday was 10-year-old Annalise Camps, the evening's youngest award recipient. She was named the Volunteer of the Year for Family Connections of Southwest Wisconsin, a family service center. "I just like helping out and helping all the people," Annalise said, holding her award certificate carefully so it wouldn't wrinkle. "It's fun." Annalise has volunteered at the center for about 1 year, helping set up for community events. It started with her helping her mom, Angela Camps, at one event, and she just decided to keep coming back. "I was really proud of her. She would always ask, 'When's your next event? When's your next event?'" said Angela, who works at Family Connections. "It's just so awesome that she wants to be there and help." Also at the event, volunteer organizations set up tables in City Park to show off their work and recruit new members. Over a dozen tables lined the sidewalk, with attendees moving casually from one to the next. There also was free food available through Platteville Optimist Club. "Many people aren't aware of all the ways you can get involved in your community until they come to an event like this," said Wayne Woodzard, executive director of Platteville Regional Chamber. "It's a great time for the clubs and activities to sell themselves and show what they do." Volunteer Karen Canny was manning the Salvation Army table, looking to recruit new bell ringers for this year's holiday season. Canny, who has been a bell ringer for 8 years, said events like this one Thursday help show a more positive side of Platteville. "It's good to get out in front of people and show them how they can volunteer," she said. "Volunteering, it shows you what a kind and generous community we have." The Party in the Park is part of Platteville's 25th annual Hometown Festival Week, which runs through Sunday, July 24th. Remaining events include a craft fair and Christian music festival. A full list of events can be found at platteville.com. Our third and final front page piece, also along the lines of volunteering, Food Bank celebrates 40 years. And here we have a large inset picture of a number of people dressed in blue shirts that say volunteer on the back, and a number of other people mingling around a large warehouse-like situation. And the caption beneath that picture reads, "Kathy Hutton, site director at St. Stephen's Food Bank, a branch of River Bend Food Bank, speaks with Jim Rowling during the 40th anniversary celebration for St. Stephen's at Convivium Urban Farmstead in Dubuque on Thursday." Over the past 40 years, Dubuque's St. Stephen's Food Bank has gone from operating out of the local rescue mission to distributing more than 2 million pounds of food last year. More than 75 people, including staff, volunteers, and community leaders, turned out to an open house to mark the organization's 40th year on Thursday at Convivium Urban Farmstead. The Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce presented the food bank with a plaque for its service to the community during the event. "It's so humbling to think my dad co-founded this 40 years ago," said Jim Rowling, son of St. Stephen's co-founder Jack Rowling. "We have been nothing but blessed on this whole adventure." Now a branch of Davenport, Iowa's River Bend Food Bank, St. Stephen's was founded in 1982 by Jack Rowling, who died in 2014, and Steve Jacobs, both of Dubuque. Jack Rowling had been in Yuma, Arizona, and witnessed the opening of a food pantry at a church. "It sounded like such a good idea that I decided to come back to Dubuque and start one," he said in a 2012 interview that was shown during Thursday's program. Teaming up with the Dubuque Rescue Mission, St. Stephen's opened in a small part of the mission's space, offering food to anybody who needed it. The current Dubuque facility is 6,000 square feet and serves Dubuque and Jackson counties in Iowa and Joe Davies County in Illinois, reaching more than 100 pantries that otherwise might struggle to fill their shelves or find food for their meal programs. St. Stephen's provides about 2 million meals a year, said Liz Dieroff, River Bend Food Bank's Director of Marketing and Communications. "That's about 10% of the total number of meals River Bend provides annually in our 23-county service area." St. Stephen's has partnered with River Bend for more than three decades. In 2018, St. Stephen's leaders opted to merge with and officially become a branch of River Bend. "A food bank is like a warehouse with lots of space to store food," Dieroff said. "We rescue food from grocers and distributors who may have food that is damaged but perfectly edible, or from businesses who do food drives. A food bank then distributes food to partner agencies, which might include pantries, shelters, and other community meal sites." Dubuque's St. Luke's Methodist Church depends on St. Stephen's for its weekly Food for the Soul program, which provides free community meals. "St. Stephen's is critical to our program," co-coordinator Mary Purdy said. "We wouldn't have the resources to do it otherwise." Matt Crow and his wife, Jennifer of Dubuque, have been volunteering at Food for the Soul for more than 8 years. "We get 95% of the food we serve weekly from St. Stephen's," Crow said. Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh acknowledged the number of volunteers in the room during his remarks. "I look around this room and see a lot of people that I know," he said, "and I know you because you volunteer everywhere. We have a community that, when we see a need, we come together and make sure that need is met." St. Stephen's co-founder, Steve Jacobs, echoed Kavanaugh's praise of volunteers. "I've been involved with nonprofits for 50 years," he said. "One of the things that I found to be true in all cases is the deep commitment of key people in those institutions. Many of them had a deep commitment to their faith, and that was wonderful to see." Executive Director Kathy Hutton has been with St. Stephen's since 2010. "When I first started, we were right at about 1 million pounds of food a year," she said. "As of last year, we distributed 2.3 million pounds of food. 40% of that distribution goes to programs administered by St. Stephen's, including backpacks of food for local students, mobile pantries, school pantries, and the hospital pantry at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center." Jacobs said that while society is divided on many fronts, keeping people fed is not one of them. "There's not a whole lot of people who oppose getting food to the table," he said. but it's still a challenge. I'm reminded of one of Mother Teresa's famous quotes, and it will always be my favorite. Not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Now we turn to some news from Dubuque and the tri-states. Dubuque continues work on fine fee reform. City of Dubuque officials are continuing their efforts to reform the city's fines and fees through a recent application for a grant to help fund that work, though it was unsuccessful. The city will not be one of five participants in Cities and Counties for Fine and Fee Justices 2022 cohort, City AmeriCorps Director Heather Slatterly told the Telegraph Herald this week. City leaders were seeking a $55,000 grant from the network to fund training and support for a team of city officials who would work with organizers and municipal and county officials across the country to create a more equitable civil and criminal financial penalty. We are a little disappointed, but at the same time, we recognize that there are other municipalities and cities and counties that might have more control over the types of fines and fees that are assessed, Slatterly said. Slatterly said she suspected the city's application was rejected because most of the issues prioritized by fine and fee justice, such as criminal or traffic penalties, costs relating to incarceration, and debt-induced driver's license suspensions, fall outside the city's jurisdiction. City staff have proposed creating a graduated payment plan or community service alternative to paying fines for parking violations or late payments on utilities. However, state court rules were changed in 2013 to limit options for restitution, including a fine threshold of at least $300 before individuals could either request community service or pay in increments. The city's proposal for use of the grant money would have dedicated significant resources to lobbying the state legislature to change those laws. Funding also would have gone toward hiring a data analyst as well as recruiting and compensating focus group members. City Council members named making financial penalties more equitable a policy priority in fall 2020. Creation of a fine and fees task force was among recommendations made in the Equitable Poverty Reduction and Prevention Plan adopted in March 2021. A city review of late utility charges released last August showed the greatest proportion of fined accounts were located in census tracts with high levels of poverty, lower median incomes, and a higher proportion of Black residents. Both Slatterly and Interim Director of Equity and Human Rights, Collins Ebo, affirmed that the city would continue to work on fine and fee reform. Moving forward, it's not so much the work we'll be stopping as we'll be leveraging our local resources, Ebo said. Slatterly said city officials working on fines and fees would meet later this month to discuss next steps, including welcoming new Chief of Equity and Human Rights, Gisela Aitken-Shadle. A second piece on this page, Greater Dubuque economic leaders emphasize need to increase workforce. And here we have a picture of Rick Dickinson, President and CEO of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, speaking on Thursday during the organization's annual meeting. And another inset picture of the audience shows people attend the Greater Dubuque Development Corporation annual meeting at Steeple Square in Dubuque. Our article reads, local economic development leaders on Thursday night emphasized the need to recruit workers to Dubuque County after the number of people in the workforce did not climb due to the COVID-19 pandemic. At their annual meeting on Thursday night at Steeple Square, Greater Dubuque Development Corporation officials reflected on the past year as well as highlighted goals for the next five. GDDC launched its 2027 capital campaign in March, aiming to raise $11 million in that time and outlining goals that include increasing population and workforce. Rick Dickinson, president and CEO of GDDC, said at Thursday's meeting that the five-year funding goal already had been exceeded with $11.7 million raised so far. "We set that goal in December 2021 when we were at the height of Omicron variant of COVID-19 and no one knew what to expect in 2022, Dickinson said. $11 million was a lowball goal when we were fearful of the year to come. Now we know, despite challenges, we need to push further. We actually need $13 million. Ahead of Thursday's meeting, Dickinson stressed the need to recruit workforce in Dubuque County. Currently, he said about 59,200 people make up the workforce, and the goal over the next 5 years is to increase that figure to 64,000. He also noted that as of May 1, 1,200 people in Dubuque County identified as unemployed, and 299 of those individuals were receiving unemployment benefits. The notion that the workforce challenges are caused by some unknown population that's living large on unemployment is a fallacy," Dickinson said. "It's never been true. But the fact is that we have people who have fallen out of the workforce. We think inflation, among other things, will cause them to reconsider." To increase workforce, Dickinson noted that GDDC invested over $100,000 to revamp AccessDubuqueJobs.com, a job search website operated by GDDC and the Telegraph Herald. GDDC also has a variety of other programs to offer job training and attract potential employees to the area. Tim Hodge, CEO of Hodge and 2021-22 GDDC Board of Directors Chair, also stressed the need to increase workforce and new businesses in Dubuque County. "What we need to do, not only in the next year, but in the next five, will be hard, but we will do it because we care," he said. DUPACO Community Credit Union President and CEO Joe Hearn, who began his term as GDDC's Board of Directors Chair on Thursday, shared at the meeting that he initially planned to leave Dubuque after graduating from Loras College. However, he was convinced to stay and work for DUPACO. "The moral of the story is that economic development is not all on Rick Dickinson and his talented team," he said. "As business leaders, it is all of our responsibilities. We need to advocate all of the tremendous opportunities we have right here before us." We now turn to our opinion page and our view, the quick takes presented by the Dubuque editorial board, and their opinion is among them. And we have today three smiley faces. Our first one, Captain Martin Airport Terminal, a fitting tribute. "The Dubuque Regional Airport Commission and other community leaders should be proud of the effort made to name the airport terminal in honor of Robert L. Martin, a Dubuque native and Tuskegee Airman. All those who supported his effort should be commended. The official renaming of the terminal follows a two-year campaign by Dubuque resident Donnell Gordon, Martin's family members, and several Dubuque residents to make it happen, raising $100,000 to fund the construction and installation of a monument at the airport. This is a great way to honor the war hero who earned the Distinguished Flying Cross, the Purple Heart, and the Congressional Gold Medal, among other commendations. Martin's achievements and his humble roots in Dubuque are part of local history that should be told, saluted, and immortalized. The Dubuque Regional Airport Commission, the Martin family, and community organizers have done a great service by shining a light on this hero's story for years to come. Our next smiley face. A lifeline was thrown out to all those feeling desperate with the introduction of a 3-digit mental health crisis hotline number. The new 988 line went live Saturday and immediately will connect callers with trained crisis counselors. This marks a major milestone for mental health support. Hotlines aren't a new concept, but advocates believe the easy-to-remember digits could have a big impact. The kind of universal coverage this line provides could be an important safety net. A bill establishing the hotline number was passed by Congress and signed into law by then-President Donald Trump in 2020. Seeing implementation just 2 years later is lightning speed in terms of legislative wheels turning. No doubt, things will not be completely smooth, and we're already hearing reports of problems, and funding for projects such as this tend to start strong and dry up. That simply cannot happen with something as vital as a number that serves as a lifeline for vulnerable citizens. Suicide rates and incidents of self-harm were rising before the pandemic, and the last 2 years have brought even more challenges. Having a line such as this available can, in itself, raise awareness about the need for mental health support. The launch of 988 is an important piece of building the structure to help those with brain health issues feel supported and not alone. Our third and final smiley face piece. As Dubuque area leaders seek enhanced amenities to draw more young people and potential workers to the area, development of a water trail provides just such an attraction. The initiative by Dubuque County Conservation has been to develop canoeing and kayaking infrastructure with the intended destination of a full county-wide water trail in the coming years. 2 years ago, participants identified opportunities to kayak as a top priority when county conservation officials sought input for strategic planning. A recently completed project at Bowstring Wildlife Area has created better water access for paddlers while also furthering the county's water quality improvement goals. Additionally, conservation staff have been holding public paddles at which participants can rent county-owned kayaks or canoes for $10. This helps inform the public of local paddling opportunities while conservation staff gather feedback from attendees. The next public paddle is scheduled for 9 a.m. July 27th at Massey Marina and is open to people 16 and older. Imagine a Dubuque County where the water trail for paddlers is as robust as the trail opportunities for hikers. County officials heeded the call of citizens in working to develop area paddling opportunities. Here's hoping local residents and newcomers get out and enjoy the ride. And today we do have one letter to the editor. Grassley's Transparency Needs Work. Sherry Flatt, Clifford Avenue, Dubuque. Transparency is an essential value. We assume people we relate to share this belief. Transparency means honesty and integrity. At work and in our personal lives, it means trust. Senator Grassley recently wrote in the TH he has worked hard to maintain a high standard of transparency. He wrote of deception in both the cattle and pharmaceutical industries and says he's working on legislating transparency in both. However, there is an essential area where his transparency is lacking. His relationship with Donald Trump isn't transparent. The insurrection took place on the day the Senate was to count the electoral state votes, January 6, 2021. The vice president always presides over the vote. What did Grassley know on January 5, the day before? He told reporters, "Well, first of all, I will be, if the vice president isn't there and we don't expect him to be there, I will be presiding over the Senate." Why would he be presiding? Where would Vice President Pence be? Senator Grassley's office immediately corrected the statement, saying Pence would be there. Did Grassley know something about January 6 plans? In the days following, Grassley said Trump's behavior was inexcusable, yet he voted against impeachment. 9 months later, he stood on the stage accepting Trump's endorsement. Transparency doesn't flip-flop. It demands honesty to gain trust. Senator Grassley can't be trusted. Vote for Admiral Michael Franken in November, a candidate we can trust. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And we are reading from the July 22nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Kathy P. Magby, Platteville. Kathy P. Magby, 75, of New Glarus, Wisconsin, formerly of Platteville, Wisconsin, died Monday, July 18th at St. Mary's Hospital, Madison. Private family memorial services will be at the Melby Funeral Home, with burial of cremains at Greenwood Cemetery, Platteville. Pastor Mary Ann Folker will officiate. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Kathy was born January 7, 1947, in Ottawa, Kansas, daughter of Harold and Bernice Chase Brown. She was married to John Magby in 1972 at St. Paul's Catholic Church, Mineral Point. For many years, Kathy had an in-home daycare, then worked for Williams Truck and Tractor, Platteville Antiques, and finished her career at Land's End. She enjoyed crafting, dancing, horseback riding, and following her daughters as they participated in rodeos. She was an avid Packer and Iowa Hawkeye fan. Mary O'Neill, Lansing, Iowa. Mary O'Neill, 74, of Lansing, died Tuesday, July 19th. A scripture service will take place at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, July 24th, at Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon, where visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, July 25th, at Immaculate Conception Wexford Catholic Church in rural Lansing. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Frederick C. Fangman. Frederick C. Fangman, 84, of Dubuque, died Thursday, July 21st. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday, July 28th, at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Burial will take place in St. Boniface Catholic Cemetery in New Vienna, Iowa. Kramer Funeral Home of Dyersville is assisting the family. Lawrence M. Richard, Mineral Point. Lawrence M. Richard, 77, of Mineral Point, died Wednesday, July 20th. Arrangements are pending. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Thomas J. Healy. Thomas J. Healy, 76, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, July 20th. Visitation will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, July 26th. At Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will follow. It's with heartfelt sympathy that we remember those who have died, but it is with joyous hearts that we announce the births of our latest little ones. And on Monday, July 18th, Fenner, Cole and Heather Fenner of Dickeyville, a girl at Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital, Dubuque. Worm, William and Amanda Worm of Scales Mound, a boy at Findlay. And on Thursday, July 21st, Cummings, Tyler and Alexandria Cummings of Dickeyville, a girl at Southwest Health, Platteville. Welcome, all you new little ones. We do have some news in brief from this page, so let's cover a little bit of that. Dubuque County man sentenced to probation for allegedly pulling gun on another driver. This comes from Epworth. A Dubuque County man recently was sentenced to 2 years of probation for allegedly pulling a gun on another driver. Mitchell J. Lukes, 25, of Epworth, was given a deferred judgment in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to possession of marijuana, possession of a dangerous weapon, and operating while intoxicated. With a deferred judgment, if probation and payment obligations are successfully completed, the record of the case is expunged. A charge of assault with a dangerous weapon was dismissed. Lukes also must pay $2,110 in civil penalties, according to the sentencing order from Iowa District Associate Judge Robert Richter. Court documents state that Jarrett Potabum of Dubuque reported that Lukes was traveling at a high rate of speed on U.S. 20 on October 2nd when he cut across the lanes to exit at Epworth, nearly hitting another vehicle in the process. Potabum followed Lukes into Epworth and told Lukes to drive more carefully. Lukes then pulled out a handgun and displayed it to Potabum, documents state. Epworth police then received a call about a vehicle driving through town at a high rate of speed on Old Highway 20 Road. Officers stopped Lukes' vehicle in Cascade. After obtaining a search warrant for the vehicle, officers found a loaded handgun, a loaded rifle, ammunition magazines, and boxes, and 1 gram of marijuana, documents state. Police, Jackson County man threatened roommate with a gun, from Maquoketa. A Jackson County man has pleaded not guilty after police said he threatened his roommate with a loaded handgun. Sean J. Gregory, 20, of Maquoketa, is charged in Iowa District Court of Jackson County with assault while displaying a dangerous weapon. Court documents state that Gregory threatened his roommate, Tanner J. Sent, with a loaded handgun at 9 p.m. June 7th at their residence. Sent told authorities he feared for his life. Gregory's next court appearance is scheduled for August 5th. Dubuque-based financial company issues quarterly dividend. HTLF, formerly known as Heartland Financial USA, announced Thursday that it would issue a quarterly cash dividend of 27 cents per share on the company's common stock, payable August 26th to stockholders of record on August 12th. As of June 30th, there were about 42.4 million common shares outstanding listed on the NASDAQ Global Select Market under the symbol HTLF, according to a press release. HTLF, headquartered in Dubuque, is a diversified financial services company with assets of $19.2 billion. The company provides banking, mortgage, investment, and other financial services, and has a presence in 12 states, including Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Three injured in two-vehicle crash in Dubuque. Three people were injured in a two-vehicle crash Wednesday in Dubuque. Michelle M. Copps, 34, and Lachlan N. Owens, 26, both of Dubuque, were taken by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, while Destiny M. Wilson, 23, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital for treatment, according to Dubuque Police. The crash occurred about 1:40 p.m. Wednesday at the intersection of Lincoln and Windsor Avenues. Police said Copps was driving west on Lincoln Avenue when she failed to stop at the stop sign and struck Owens' vehicle, which was traveling south on Windsor, with Wilson as a passenger. Copps was cited with failure to obey a stop sign, and Owens was cited with driving with a suspended license. Coupons available to older adults for produce. Northeast Iowa Area Agency on Aging is offering coupons to older adults to purchase locally grown produce at farmers markets, roadside stands, and community-supported agricultural programs. Each eligible participant receives 10 coupons with a total value of $30 through the Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program, according to a press release. Eligible participants must be at least 60 years old, live in the agency's service area, and have a yearly household income of no more than $25,142 for a single person, $33,874 for a married couple. The agency's service area includes Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, and Jackson counties. Applications and more information are available at NEI3A.org or call 1-800-779-8707. We continue now with some more tri-state news. Probes of many complaints at Iowa nursing homes lag. Iowa lawmakers aren't addressing the state's oversight of nursing homes, advocates for the elderly say, despite a backlog of hundreds of uninvestigated complaints. Elected officials should be shouting from the rooftops about their dissatisfaction with the current state of affairs, said John Hale, a consultant and an advocate for Iowa seniors. Yet they aren't. Their silence means they are either entirely comfortable with the status quo or they weren't aware there was a problem. Either response is unsatisfactory. 2 weeks ago, the Iowa Capital Dispatch reported that the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals had 410 complaints pending against Iowa nursing homes that were at least 30 days old. Of those, 201 complaints, almost half the total number, were more than 120 days old, and 24 unresolved complaints were at least a year old. Senator Zach Walls of Coralville, minority leader in the Iowa Senate, said he was pretty stunned at the number of unresolved complaints at DIA. The governor's disastrous handling of our economy has compromised the ability of long-term care facilities to fully staff their buildings and made it harder for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office, or DIA, to conduct routine inspections, he said. Governor Kim Reynolds and Iowa Republicans have made this crisis worse, not better, by refusing to prioritize funds for DIA inspectors or the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office, and by signing off on the discontinuation of on-site visits by long-term care ombudsmen. Representative Brent Segrist, a Council Bluffs Republican and an assistant majority leader in the House, said the complaint backlog is certainly concerning, though he's not sure what sort of action lawmakers might take next year. It's certainly something that merits some attention, he said. I think that article probably had some people wondering what's going on, so I assume it will get some attention. Representative Mike Bergen, a Dorchester Republican, said he's not sure how receptive lawmakers will be to providing additional ongoing appropriations for more nursing home inspections or long-term care ombudsmen, but said lawmakers did provide new money this year for the inspections department to bring itself up to date on complaint investigations over the next 18 months. DIA officials have said that the COVID-19 pandemic is largely to blame for the backlog of uninvestigated complaints. After the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, suspended state inspections at nursing homes to protect residents, it developed a COVID-19 focused infection control process that directed state agencies like DIA to focus their inspections on infection prevention. As a result, complaint investigations were temporarily limited to those involving infection issues and those involving allegations of immediate jeopardy to residents' health and safety. That, in turn, led to a growing nationwide backlog of uninvestigated complaints. Currently, CMS is requiring state agencies to reduce their complaint backlogs by 60%. DIA inspectors are working on the backlog with federally certified contractors who have been hired to help in that effort. Federal work performance reviews of DIA show that long before the pandemic hit, the state agency had difficulty meeting federal standards for investigating complaints. Those reviews indicate that between September 2018 and September 2019, DIA fielded 971 nursing home complaints that residents' mental, physical, or psychosocial status were being harmed. Those cases were considered serious enough that a rapid response by DIA was required, which meant that an on-site visit was to be made by state inspectors within 10 days. The agency failed to meet that standard in 631 cases, or 65% of the time. In fact, 41 of those homes still hadn't been visited by an inspector at the time of the federal performance review, which was conducted in March 2020. The previous year, DIA fielded 1,041 nursing home complaints that alleged harm. In 646 of those cases, or 62% of the time, the agency failed to conduct an inspection within the 10-day time frame. Six complaints languished for more than 130 days with no inspection taking place. In 2017, the Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services studied states' compliance with the federally imposed deadlines for investigating complaints. The study revealed that almost one-fourth of all states had failed to meet performance thresholds for timely, on-site investigations of high-priority complaints in each of the 5 years studied. At that time, Iowa was one of four states that failed to meet the standard in 4 of the 5 years. Investigations shouldn't take 120 days to complete, said Hale. And investigations taking over a year to complete? That, pure and simple, is a total failure of government to protect the health and safety of Iowans. Frankly, I'm tired of witnessing and being told stories about inadequate care at too many of these facilities. Residents deserve better care. Taxpayers deserve better use of their dollars. Next piece, local man sentenced to prison on federal weapons charge. A man recently was sentenced to nearly 5 years in federal prison for illegally possessing a firearm and a high-capacity magazine in Dubuque. Dennis E. Williams, Jr., 32, of Dubuque, was sentenced in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to 4 years and 9 months in prison after previously pleading guilty to being an unlawful drug user in possession of a firearm. He must serve 3 years of supervised release after his prison term. There is no parole in the federal system. According to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa and state court documents, Williams' vehicle was stopped by Dubuque police on March 23, 2021, for having expired registration on the license plates. A canine unit indicated the presence of marijuana in the vehicle. Officers located a loaded 9mm handgun in Williams' coat pocket, and he was found to be carrying about $8,000, documents state. The handgun was reported stolen in Dubuque in September 2014. The release states that Williams also had a 50-round drum magazine and had marijuana in his system at the time. And our final tri-state piece? Authorities. Farmer engaged in unlicensed slaughter operation. From Holy Cross. Authorities said a Dubuque County man operated an unlicensed meat slaughter and processing operation out of his farm. Patrick D. Cook, 67, of rural Holy Cross, was arrested at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at his residence on a warrant charging second-degree fraudulent practice, a Class D felony, punishable by up to 5 years imprisonment. Court documents state that the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship began investigating Cook in November 2019 when a compliance officer with the state agency agreed to purchase 15 pounds of rope sausage from Cook. Iowa regulators obtained a search warrant for Cook's farm on March 20, 2020, and met with Cook and investigated the property with the assistance of the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department. Cook signed a statement that he slaughtered and processed swine a couple of times a year and showed investigators swine carcasses hanging in a machine shed cooler located on his farm. Cook told investigators that he purchased the swine from a local swine producer for $125 each and that the swine were slaughtered in an uncontrolled environment by the farm's milking parlor, without the swine being stunned first, documents state. The swine were then skinned, eviscerated, split with a reciprocating saw, and placed into the walk-in cooler in the machine shed, documents state. Cook used a skid loader or utility vehicle to retrieve carcasses from the machine shed cooler and carried them through the milking parlor into the utility room where the processing and packing is conducted, documents state. Cook admitted that he had been selling pork products for 6 years and that some of his customers were not employees or family but friends and acquaintances instead. Cook signed a written statement and a compliance agreement to discontinue unlicensed slaughter and processing operations, but regulators performed a covert purchase from Cook on January 30, 2021, documents state. A warrant was issued for Cook's arrest on May 12th. And a little bit more of our news in brief. Country star with 11 number one hits will take stage in Dubuque with wife and daughter. Clint Black, his wife Lisa Hartman Black, and their daughter Lily Pearl Black will take the stage at 7:30 p.m. Sunday, November 20th at Five Flags Center as part of the couple's Mostly Hits and the Misses tour. Facility officials shared concert details with the Telegraph Herald prior to their public announcement this morning. Ticket prices start at $46 plus fees. They will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, July 29th at the Five Flags box office and Ticketmaster.com. Clint and Lisa Experience VIP packages also will be sold at FiveFlagsCenter.com. It will be Clint Black's first performance at Five Flags. He most recently took the stage in Dubuque in 2019 as part of America's River Festival, drawing 2,500 people. Black burst onto the country music scene with his debut album in 1989, winning Academy of Country Music Awards for Albums of the Year, Top Male Vocalist, Top New Male Vocalist, and Single of the Year for A Better Man. He has notched 11 number one hits and 28 top 10 songs on the Billboard Country Airplay chart. His number one hit include Like the Rain, Nobody's Home, Summer's Comin', and his duet with his wife, When I Said I Do. Hartman Black also is known for her acting, mostly notably having starred in the TV series Knots Landing. Lily Pearl Black is a budding musician as well, who is touring with her parents. State awards $750,000 in grants for upgrades planned at Maquoketa's Recreation Center. Governor Kim Reynolds announced the Destination Iowa Award to the City of Maquoketa and Jackson County Conservation for work at the 273-acre Prairie Creek Recreation Area along Iowa 64. The entities had applied for $800,000. The project would include the installation of a whitewater paddling course on the Maquoketa River, a championship-caliber disc golf course, and ADA-accessible hiking trails, states a press release from the governor's office. Local officials previously said the proposed project also includes a pedestrian bridge, a shelter, restrooms, and various other improvements to water quality and park accessibility. Local officials previously said the proposed improvements had an estimated cost of about $2 million, more than half of which was already covered by the state revolving funds sponsored projects program. Construction could begin late this year. The local award was one of several announced Thursday by state officials through the Destination Iowa Grant Program. Of the $100 million allocated to the program, more than $21 million has been awarded. One local application remains outstanding. The city of Dyersville applied for $12.5 million toward the construction of a $50 million, 3,000-seat permanent baseball stadium at the Field of Dreams movie site. Free trees available through rebate program available to Dubuque residents. Free trees are available through a rebate for Dubuque residents. The trees are available through a program of the City of Dubuque Sustainability Office, Dubuque Trees Forever, and local nurseries, according to a press release. Eligible residents must attend one of three one-hour information sessions. The sessions include information on tree planting and how trees impact climate action on a local level, according to the release. The sessions will be held from 6 to 7 p.m. on three Thursdays, July 28th, August 25th, and September 29th at Carnegie Stahl Public Library. Registration is not required. And now our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do in the tri-state, starting off with wooden wind catchers and leaf identification. Today, Julian Dubuque Monument, 9 to 11 a.m., learn to recognize different leaves and trees and create a wind chime while looking over the Mississippi River. Suggested age for ages 7 to 11, admission is free. For more information, 563-556-0620. The Great Jones County Fair, today through Sunday in Monticello, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. today and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. Concerts, harness racing, stock cars, fireworks, and more at one of the world's oldest county fairs. Tickets available for purchase online and at the gate. Concert tickets are not included in admission. Admission is $5 from 8 to 1, $10 after 1 p.m. Friday, $10 all day Saturday and Sunday, free for kids 10 and under. And that brings us to the end of Ken's reading of the Friday, July 22nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, brought to you always by IRIS and the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service. Funded also in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. Please know, there's more than just my voice and the voices of my other compatriots in the Dubuque reading area on IRIS. So tune into IRIS for more things you might find out there to listen to. And until next week, play it safe. It's a hot one again today. Might be cooling off after some rain later this weekend, but play it safe. Take care of yourselves and tune in again next week. So long until then.